Hello and welcome to another episode of the Elastic Curve podcast on Samba Foot with me, Christopher Atkins. And we're here today to discuss a bit of transfer happenings, pre-season talk, and a look ahead to the state championships. And I'm joined once more by the Elastic Curve founder, Rio Coimbra. Hello, Rio.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. We'll come on to your recent dismay with Flamengo in a minute. I'll save that. And on the other line, I have Robert, and you join us from Rio Grande do Sul. Hello, Robert.
Hi, Chris. Pleasure to be here, as always.
So, Robert, before we get Rio in on the matter, if you just want to explain a bit to the listeners, what's been going on at Flamengo in the last week or two?
Flamengo looks set to lose certainly one and quite possibly arguably two of their major stars, Juan Gaúcho and Thiago Neves, who have signed for rival Fluminense. The Thiago Neves affair was a long time coming. It was quite a drawn-out saga as to whether Flamengo would be able to retain his services. But it seems almost as disturbing is that Flamengo could lose Ronaldinho Gaúcho. And I'm certain, or I'd like to hear Rio's opinion on this, but I mean, one could even argue that Flamengo, the club itself, are not that much at fault in terms of what I believe is the non-payment of Ronaldinho's salary, or let's consider the half payment of his salary. Flamengo were involved in a kind of a joint venture with Traffic, the famous marketing consortium. The idea was that Traffic would pay, I think, half of Ronaldinho's wages, but of course the club was to provide the other half. But during the past 2 or 3 months, basically Flamengo announced that they could no longer afford to pay Ronaldinho's full salary, his full wage. So Ronaldinho got on with the job professionally, and even though he was not earning the full amount due to him. Now, this seems to have led to a situation whereby Ronaldinho's brother Assis has been making noises to the effect that if Ronaldinho does not receive full payment and full satisfaction, as is his due per the contract, Corinthians are strongly believed to be among the suitors who would be interested in hiring Ronaldinho.
Rio, so Thiago Neves looks dead set to have departed for Fluminense now. As Robert says, Ronaldinho is now making noises as though he's signing at his options. You're a Flamengo fan. What's your view on this, considering there's been, at the same time, no major reinforcements to a squad that at times struggled last season?
Yeah, to be honest, it's all a little ridiculous. And you have to absolutely question the people running the club and what they're doing and what they're being paid to do. The truth of the matter is that a lot of these issues should have been dealt with a long time ago. Thiago Neves was on loan last year. Flamengo had a clause to be able to purchase him with a set amount of money by a certain point last year. They let that date go by. They let the season end. And they only really started pursuing the buyout of Thiago Neves from Al Hilal, the Middle Eastern club, pretty late into the year, pretty much going into 2012. And that's what's allowed Fluminense to then come in, because Flamengo was so slow to it, and also they seem to not have much money to be able to throw around at the moment. With Ronaldinho, it's a similar thing. It's been something like 5 months now that Trafic's portion of Ronaldinho's contract hasn't been paid out to Ronaldinho. And the reasons for that, although Flamengo have paid their part of the contract, I do blame Flamengo to the extent that it is their job to ensure that their relationship with Trafficy is sorted out. Trafficy brought up issues that they had with Flamengo, having to do with image rights and sponsorships that Flamengo supposedly did not abide by the original contract with Trafficy, which is why they've been holding payment. So, you know, both these cases, like I said, Flamengo should have, could have done things a long time ago before last season ever ended. There's no reason why these should be issues that are now being dragged out into, you know, the off season into 2012. And with Flamengo's attention pretty much entirely focused on these two things for the past few weeks, it has meant that they haven't really signed anybody, or at least nobody of sort of a high standard that you would expect a club like Flamengo to sign. So again, it's all very ridiculous, and I severely question the leadership of the club at the moment.
And of course, because they failed to meet the terms of the contract, Al Hilal are now saying that the money Flamengo have paid for 10% of Thiago Neves' rights is now also not valid as well. So they might actually lose out on that 10% of the transfer fee when he does move to Fluminense. But Rio, just Flamengo, when the new TV deal was negotiated alongside Corinthians, got the biggest portion of the money allocated. And so if you look at Corinthians, they're eyeing up the likes of supposedly Carlos Tevez, Walter Montillo from Cruzeiro, who could cost up to 15 million euros. And at the same time, Flamengo tried to get Wagner Love in installments of I think 60 months. What's going on at Flamengo? Where is this money that they're supposed to have?
Well, you know, I think Flamengo is a club in huge debt. They have a lot of loans that they have to pay out every month. And, you know, there are payments to several players that are delayed and have not been made to do with sort of end-of-year bonuses and image rights and things of that nature. The salaries have been on time, with the exception of Ronaldinho, but there's still some bonuses that have not been paid. So you're right, there's a lot of money that Flamengo is getting, but there's a lot of money that Flamengo owes to banks, to clubs, to former players, to current players. And the matter, you know, what Flamengo essentially said a few months ago was that they had no money to spend in 2011. They were going to have to wait until 2012 to be able to buy anybody. But still, they still don't have the money yet, which is, you know, it explains the Wagner Love offer with the ridiculous, you know, whatever you said, 60 months, because Flamengo knows that it will be getting money, but it doesn't have any to spend right now. So it wants to make deals where they can pay things off in the future, which, incidentally, is how they got into 350 million reais of debt in the first place. But that's the order of business there.
Just for our listeners, what 350 million reais in pounds or euros would be how much?
I think, well, I live in the U.S., so I can tell you in U.S. dollars. I think it's almost 200.
Robert, do you think the lack of Thiago Neves for the coming season, the clear disappointment and almost anger of the Flamengo fans now, is going to force the board to have to go out and make a big name signing, maybe even before the state championships fully kick into gear?
I think it will. I mean, I just don't see how a social mass, like a movement like Flamengo, can remain patient. You know, it would just be such an unstable situation. But then again, you know, you looked at, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but we've seen sides such as São Paulo, who kind of, they've hired a slightly lower profile of player, excellent quality, like, for example, Jadson from Shakhtar Donetsk. And part of me is thinking that, you know, Flamengo should be trying to sign a couple of these guys, you know, this profile of player to strengthen the team. So I believe they will. Now, who knows what they will do? I mean, you know, this crazy world, I wouldn't rule out something like an attempt to sign Adriano from Grinch. So I really don't know, but it has to be a big name. So there has to be kind of a political element for that. But on purely sporting grounds, purely footballing grounds, I think Flamengo have even less room for maneuverability. They have less room to kind of wriggle out of this. Because clearly, you know, you can plan, you can more or less confect a squad during the state championship with a view to the Brasileirão. But, you know, I think with a club like Flamengo, they need to present their full squad in its basic year-long format at the beginning of the season, you know?
And Rio, just a final couple of points on Flamengo. You've seen a bit of their couple of preseason games so far. How have they been? And just to talk a little about, they seem to be struggling to find a shirt sponsor, which seems bemusing for a team of their stature in Brazil.
You know, I think their preseason is one that has lacked focus in a lot of ways because of all these issues going on in the background. And, you know, the captain of the team, the guy that's supposed to represent the club and embody, you know, what it stands for is Ronaldinho. And, you know, he's, you know, there's talks about him possibly leaving, possibly going to Corinthians. And, you know, at the same time, even when preseason started, he missed a few morning practices because he apparently couldn't sleep during the night, a.k.a. he was out partying. So he didn't make it to a few morning sessions. And even Lucian Burgo, the Flamengo manager, has spoken about how there is a lack of focus and what he called a lack of commitment, that he's not blaming on the players, he's blaming on the board. But, you know, I think they've played decently well. You know, it's very early on, and I don't think too much can be judged from their performances. The positives that I will note is that it's good to see Dario Bocinelli back, the Argentinian, who did pretty well last season, had a few highs and lows, and unfortunately had a terrible injury that put him out for the latter half of the season. But it's good to see him back, and he looks hungry to fight back into the first team. So that's one positive I can point out, at least. As for the shirt sponsorship, you're right. It's, you know, it's just another example of how ridiculous it is that the club with the biggest support base in Brazil, very popular, very strong brand, international brand, with one of the most, you know, well-recognized and most famous names in world football today, still to this day, Ronaldinho, you know, they can't get a main shirt sponsor. They struggled last year for a while to get one. They finally got one, but it was only till the end of the season, and now they don't have one again. So, you know, they don't have money to spend right now. They really need money, and yet they're not fighting and, you know, to get a shirt sponsorship that could easily bring in 10 or 15 million to them that they can go out and spend on players. So it's just another example of really how ridiculous the whole situation is.
Over the past couple of weeks, Enrio, I know I've been talking to you, and I've talked to others who've spoken to me on Twitter, and Flamengo are at one end of the spectrum, and at the other end, we very much have to look at a club like Sao Paulo. And Robert, you touched upon the purchase of Jadson, which for the price being quoted, about 6 million euros, I think I saw, or maybe even less than that, it seems like fantastic business for a player with a pedigree in the Champions League and international experience. But Robert, he's not the only seemingly good signing they brought in this transfer window. Bruno Cortez, a left-back, looks to be a very good buy. They paid only around 900,000 euros for him, which is outstanding for a player who played in the Seleção in 2011. And also Fabrizio from Cruzeiro, who is one of the top midfielders in the league. They seem to have really strengthened their team.
Yeah, exactly. So I think someone else's approach is to try and make all sectors of the team equally strong without having a superstar. I mean, to an extent, we could argue that Luis Fabian is that kind of media marketing figure, although I don't really think he has the cachet as an Angelino or somebody of that nature, or indeed Adriano in Corinthians. But I know, I think that when you look at São Paulo, it seems like a very typical policy of them, of theirs, to go back to the... They kind of lost their way somewhat in the last year and a half. To go back to the way they were, that impressive, well-run club, which tends to form a lot of young players as well. I mean, we've got Casemiro, who managed to hold on to. So you just look at in all areas, they just seem like a very strong strong squad. Okay, one can have doubts about the coach, but to be honest, even if they get through the state championships and they have to fire Leão and hire a new coach, I would still hold hopes for this São Paulo to do quite well, certainly to be in Libertadores at least.
And Rio, I know as a Flamengo fan, you've looked on very enviously at the way São Paulo have been run, and not just in transfer activity as such, in terms of the way they deal with the media as well.
Yeah, I think, as you said, São Paulo is really the best counterexample to Flamengo of how a club should be run. And I think that, you know, they São Paulo takes their lesson from a more European mindset, if you will. And they don't really act like your normal average Brazilian club. And what you sort of hinted there at with your question that we've discussed about before is that, you know, São Paulo is in openly talking about all, you know, their potential transfers in the market and who they're interested in. And, you know, they don't blow smoke just for the sake of doing it. They're very strategic. They keep deals under wraps until they're going through. They find good value in the market. You know, they're just smart people running this club in an intelligent way. And you can see it just, you know, exactly what Robert said, that, you know, they're not trying to bring in big names just because it's a big name that will make fans happy. You know, they bring in very smart, sensible players. They round out their squad really well. They have depth in the squad. They don't pay over the top for contracts. When they do go out and make a big money purchase, it tends to make a lot of sense. Like Luis Fabiano deal made a lot of sense. And even that was, you know, right after getting money for Lucas Piazon from Chelsea, they just went off and bought Luis Fabiano, which if you look at in those terms, that's pretty fantastic. Of course, Piazon might turn out to be a fantastic player one day, but it's still a lot of potential. And to bring in such a quality player like Fabiano to then lead your line, that's fantastic.
Robert, I look at this team then. If we're expecting them to line up in a kind of 4-2-2-2 system, and there's a lot of talk of Osvaldo coming in to partner Luis Fabiano up front, but I look at the midfield four that's being talked about, Fabrizio, Danielson on loan from Arsenal, Lucas, Moura, and then Jadson. And that strikes me as a midfield who could do very well in pretty much any league in the world.
Indeed, in any league, any competition, even and especially in the Brazil realm and the Libertadores. What do you notice about that quartet, which you mentioned, Chris, that they are so well-rounded? All those players are technically adroit, and yet they also have a measure of defensive steel about them as well. They're tactically very disciplined. They've played in all manner of sides, from Shakhtar Donetsk to Arsenal. Casemiro has real leadership qualities on top of that, throughout the junior levels of the Seleção. So you look at that side, and then, you know, we could even add into it, I suppose, players like, you know, Marlos and of course, Lucas. You know, you could argue that those guys are almost like attackers, you know, that they're almost forwards. And so even then, the tactical flexibility which they offer you, they could play 4-2-2, 4-3-3, or any kind of variation in between. So you just hope that, I mean, as a neutral,
insofar as anybody's neutral. You would hope that if you were a coach, basically, and if you had these players at your disposal, you'd be rubbing your hands. You know, this is a squad which could mount a title challenge.
Rio, then moving on from Sao Paulo, if we're going to look at midfields that are making fans kind of drool ahead of the season, Fluminense, with the potential of Wagner and Thiago Neves linking up in those Meia positions, that looks to have the potential, if they can combine, of being a midfield that can spark a title challenge.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, this Fluminense squad was already fantastic last season. I think that they were actually one of the strongest teams in the second half of last term, if they hadn't had such a slow start to the season, which I sort of, looking back now, blame at you know, the fact that they had been champions the year before that. So probably a little bit of championship hangover, but it's a fantastic squad. And yeah, adding the likes of Wagner, who we spoke about in the previous podcast, and yeah, Thiago Neves, who I know quite well. Plus, you know, you have Deco in there still, who started playing very well towards the end of last season. You have Fregi up front. You have Rafael Sobis. You know, it's quality all over the field.
And Robert, do you then see Fluminense and probably alongside Sao Paulo as being the two biggest winners of the transfer window? I know Grêmio, for example, have bought some interesting prospects, but the way I see it, those two seem to have been the biggest winners so far.
Yeah, because, you know, as Rio mentioned there, you know, Fluminense were already the 2010 champions. They kept most of that squad intact. They had a very impressive segunda volta, you know, second half of the season last year. And so they just seem formidable now, they along with São Paulo. In the case of Grêmio, a team like Grêmio, you know, I think it was the case that any improvement was a major improvement from last season. What Grêmio have done is they've hired a coach, Kang Jr., who of course was the Botafogo coach sometime last year. And Caio's kind of, I've been following the preseason training here in the southern Brazilian highlands. And a great Grêmio's training camp, reports have emerged of the kind of football he's trying to impose on Grêmio. And there are some quite impressive highlights from this. For example, you see, we see a kind of 4-2-2-2 system as typical of Brazilian football, except when they lose the ball, Caio Jr. is placing great importance on tracking back and keeping shape, forming two lines of four, you know, like more like a British 4-4-2. So he wants Grêmio to be quite solid, and that's the operative word here, solidarity. And with that in mind, rather than giving a completely free role to the two creative players, who this season will be Douglas and Marco Antonio, he's in charge of those two players with playing in a way to perhaps the way Manchester City play or Villarreal play. You know, they start out in a wide midfield position. When Grêmio have the ball, they can move into the center and link up the strikers and allow the fullbacks to overlap, as was the standard formula of Brazilian football. When they lose the ball, he wants them tracking back to the same line of pressure as the two volantes. And in this case, it seems that the two volantes, both volantes of Grêmio season, I have them here. Yeah, I've lost it. I beg your pardon. I was looking at Inter's notes here. Sorry. That's the basic format. It's going to be a flat 4-4-2 this season. And another thing to point out, like a player like Fabio Hoschenbach has sort of been demoted to the reserves.
I thought that was interesting as well, because I probably read the same article as you on Grêmio's preseason games. And I thought it was very interesting that Rottenbach and Gilberto Silva were very much lining up in the reserves in training. And they looked to be putting a lot of faith in Fernando, who I saw at the Under-20 World Cup, and he greatly impressed me there. He seems to be very much a technically gifted Volante, and he's strong and fairly quick. So I'm interested to see how he does this season. Rio, but Grammy, obviously all eyes are going to look straight towards that strike pairing of Kleber and Marcelo Moreno. What are your thoughts on them? Do you think they can combine as a pair?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, and I'm sure Grêmio thinks so as well. That's why they bought him. You know, I think Kleber is a very versatile player, and he can play with in a lot of different styles. And you know, I'll admit that I don't know Moreno quite as well. I haven't had too much time to watch him, so I can't speak about how I think they would link up. But from everything I've read about him, I think certainly there's a lot of potential in that strike partnership. I think Kleber is probably still going to be the main guy there, and probably the reference point, and Moreno sort of a nice complement to him.
Is that how you see it, Robert?
Yeah, in fact, those Rio took the words right out of the mouth of Kleber. Kleber has said and stated in interviews that Caio Jr., the coach, asked him and many of the more senior players just before the training sessions began in which position they felt more comfortable, and he devised a system with that in mind. Yeah, it definitely seems that Marcelo Moreno will be kind of a central striker, and Kleber will have freedom to kind of revolve around him to run the different channels of attack and have a bit more freedom even to get involved in the creative tasks. But that's the way they're going to line up. I do have a slight concern with this in terms of the tactical scheme. I mean, on paper and in theory, it looks very good because you get a very creative impetus, and also you have a lot of positional fluidity. But I just wonder, with a player like Douglas, will he be willing to fit into it? Will he be willing to do the defensive work required? I mean, you know, supposing he's coming up against, for example, a fullback like Bruno Cortes, he has to track that player. And I don't think it's in somebody like Douglas's nature. You know, if any of our listeners are not too familiar with Douglas's style of play, try to imagine him as a kind of Riquelme type figure, you know, in every sense of the word. You know? He majestic on the ball, but just an absolute individualist. And he's very slow, very languid, very graceful. But I just wonder whether Grêmio would prefer to finally land a Giuliano from Ukraine. I think if they manage to land Giuliano, as has been rumored, I think he and Marc Antonio in the kind of the Mea, wide Mea positions, would be far more flexible and offer a lot more incision and verve than would Douglas.
Well, you're based in Rio Grande do Sul, Robert. And you're right, there has been a lot of talk of Giuliano or even possibly Carlos Eduardo coming back on loan deals. Do you think either of them are viable options?
Oh, yeah, more than viable. Excellent options. I would say that I think that Giuliano, throughout Inter's Great Internacional's successful 2011 Doherty's campaign, was underused. In fact, bizarrely, he was voted player of the tournament, you know, scored some vitally important goals, including in the final. And yet, as coach, then Inter coach, later Grêmio coach, Selvocci, never really viewed him as a starter, as one of the starting 11. He was kind of a super sub. But I think Giuliano is just the typical modern Meia. You know, he's so versatile. He's, to put it this way, he's the kind of Brazilian player who would easily fit in a Barcelona-type structure, if you know what I mean. He's just very adept. And for a club like Grêmio to land Giuliano would be incredible. And, you know, if we can bring him back to Flamengo, in a sense, I think this is the profile of player, and also that of Carlos Eduardo, who had great success in Germany and Eastern Europe, He's the kind of creative player I think that the clubs, top Brazilian clubs, should be trying to sign.
Moving on to Internacional then, Rio. We spoke last time, obviously, about Dagoberto arriving and the potential for him linking up alongside Leandro Damião. Do you see them building upon last season, or do you think it'll very, very much status quo for Internacional this year?
Like I spoke about before, I do like the Dagoberto move a lot, and I think that will definitely help them score more goals. I think he's a great complement to Damião, player to play off of Damião. And, you know, with Oscar, I'm sure he will continue to improve and only get better. Still a very young, exciting player who's improved a lot last year, and I'm sure will continue improving. And I've always really liked D'Alessandro, so I think those four are you know, potentially a great front four for any team in the league. I think they probably have other areas of the team that they need to improve if they want to be serious title contenders. They could probably do with, a better or one strong center back signing. So, you know, with Bolivar potentially leaving, rumors that he might be on his way out, I think they would need a strong center back signing. And there are also rumors that Kleber, their left back, might be leaving. He's a good player, experienced player, with some Brazil experience. But I think Internacional are the type of club that very sensibly try to cash in on players when they can, and now will probably be a good time to do that. I think that they don't have a lot of depth in that squad, unfortunately. So they would need to round out the squad a little bit more to prevent any serious injuries from severely affecting their season. But, you know, the first 11 is you know, one of the stronger first 11 in the league, I would say.
Would you agree with that summary, Robert?
Yeah, I do. I think I would agree with Leo. I think it's pretty much a case of Inter staying as they were, staying at the same level as they were, maybe with a slight, well, with a slight improvement with Dagoberto, not in the sense that Dagoberto is an insignificant addition, I think he's a fine addition, but as Rio alluded to there, there are just some areas of the team where they really should have reinforced or indeed scrapped some players and got in new signings altogether. Another problem area, I think, as well as centre-back, where, you know, you have Inju, who's I think he's almost 34 years old, he's not 35 now, and Bolivar, who's also closer to his retirement than many would like. And of course, there's a younger player, Rodrigo Moledo, who's quite impressive, but all the talk now is of Inter finding a centre-back who can be partnered with Rodrigo Moledo. But particularly in central midfield with Valencia, I would be concerned. Niazu is not getting any younger. Mario Bolatti has actually been effectively demoted to third choice in a two-man central midfield. So it seems that the youngster Elton has taken the command. Now you look at Guinezu exudes a certain charisma, but as his physical qualities decline, as well as that of Chinga, you just wonder whether that is a very imposing central midfield for this year ahead. I'm not convinced it is. Like Rio, I would be very optimistic about the front four, Damião, Dagoberto being supplied by D'Alessandro and Oscar. But I would still think that Inter need some key signings, not necessarily big signings, not even signings from overseas, repatriating players, but they really need to strengthen some vulnerable areas.
Robert, I think we've been a bit positive since we talked about Flamengo, so I'm going to bring us back down to earth. My club, Cruzeiro, it's it wasn't a good season last year, and the transfer window has done nothing to impress Cruzeirense fans.
No, and I think the ongoing saga over Montillo, it must be leaving you quite worried, Chris. You know, especially I think when you wonder
if Cruzeiro could have gotten hold of a media such as Hojer or of the quality of Wagner that they had 2 years ago, you know, or 3 seasons ago, you just wonder, like, what is impeding Cruzeiro from signing a raft of impressive players? And this is one of the biggest clubs in Brazil, you know.
Well, this is my point. If you look at the players Cruzeiro have sold in the past 12 months, starting with Jonathan to Santos, who then went on to Inter in Italy, and you go through Gil, Thiago Ribeiro, Bernardo, Dudu, where has this money gone? Because it clearly Rio isn't being put out into new signings.
Yeah, it's it's moments like these that, you know, I wish there was a lot more transparency in how these clubs are run, and you know, you could figure out exactly the answer to that question. Where has the money gone? I think in general, Cruzeiro is more of a team that tries to unearth, you know, new talent either through their own system or by good scouting within Brazil itself. They don't tend to go out after sort of bigger signings. They don't you know, repatriate a lot of players, which is a bit of a shame because there's a lot of good players that have, you know, a positive past experience going through Cruzeiro, exactly like the types of Wagner that, you know, you would think would be great for Cruzeiro to try and bring some of these guys back to the club where sort of launch their careers. But it seems like Cruzeiro doesn't really approach it that way as part of that strategy. So, you know, the truth of the matter is this is a club that almost got relegated last year, and they haven't really done anything to improve upon that past position. So I think that, you know, it's a dangerous thing that they're doing right now. Maybe there has been too much focus on Montillo. It's great if they get to keep him because he's a fantastic player of a very high caliber, but you know, Montillo is also somewhat inconsistent, and I'm not sure he can replicate that exact form that essentially saved Cruzeiro from relegation last season. To rely on him a second time around to do the same job, you know, that's asking a lot, I think.
And then, Robert, Rio makes a good point. So Cruzeiro have a couple of factors in their favor. They have unearthed these kind of Serie B talents in the past, which I guess is what they've tried to do this window. And they also do have one of the better youth systems in Brazil, alongside the likes of Santos, Sao Paulo, Grêmio, these kind of clubs who continually seem to produce great young talent. But like Rio says, they almost got relegated. They've lost Fabrizio, who's gone to Sao Paulo, who is a great signing for them. They possibly might lose Walter Montillo. The only name of note to have come in is Diego Arias, the Colombian from PAOK Salonika in Greece. The rest of the names, they're taking a huge gamble with relegation here. I guess the state championships will be a time to test it out, but if it doesn't work, then you're thinking they've got to strengthen before the league season starts, or they risk losing that status of never having been relegated.
Yeah, and if they just try and create a patchwork squad now with with unimpressive signings and try and, you know, stumble through the state championship and emerge with some degree of dignity, saving face, then that would just lead, that's just like, you know, kicking the can down the road. Before the Brazilian round begins, they will have to invest in a big name player. That's the last thing you want to do, is to be facing a situation where you have to sign a big name, an impressive name, and you have a very small window of time in which to do so and in which to integrate that player into the squad. So, I, as a Cruzeiro MC, Chris, I think you should be concerned.
Well, I think there aren't many Cruzeirenses out there who aren't concerned, but at least, Robert, one thing that does give Cruzeirenses a bit of hope is the goings-on across the city at Atletico, who seem to be performing their usual trick of They've signed a couple of decent players in Rafael Márquez from Grêmio, not the Mexican Rafael Márquez, I should point out. Danilinho, who did well in the Serie B for them, as well as Escudero, also of Grêmio. But they've lost Daniel Carvalho. So once more, Atletico fans face a season having lost one of their key men from the year before.
Yeah, but they've managed. Well, I think as part of the deal with Palmeiras, the trade with Daniel Carvalho, they've held on to Pierre, who's a former Volante for Palmeiras. I like Pierre. I think he's very, he imposes himself very well in that holding midfield position. But I just think it's very indicative of the current state of Atletico Mineiro in recent years that when they signed a player like Daniel Carvalho, who's considered a kind of an unfulfilled promise and come back as sort of a busted flush from Europe, and when they finally managed to resuscitate this player, they can't hold on to him for one reason or another. He goes to Palmeiras to make up the numbers there. So I think that's a kind of a sad indictment of Atletico.
Rio, do you see it in a similar way to Robert? What's your take on the goings on at Galo this window?
Yeah, I think my thoughts match what you guys have said. I also really like that the Pierre move. I think he'll be a great addition to that squad and should walk straight into the first team. And you know, Daniel Carvalho, it's interesting because In some ways, he never really won over the Galo fan base. I think some people really liked him, but others maybe slightly questioned his work ethic or, you know, his consistency. He showed up for some games, but not others. So I think maybe there's just too much expectation on him. And, you know, unfortunately, Atlético Mineiro relies on these kind of one big signing of a transfer window and then expect that one player to do really well. And that doesn't really work. You know, it's 11 players out on the field. You need a full squad that complements each other. And, you know, their entire approach over the past few seasons has been very questionable. Like you said, that, you know, they usually lose one big player every year and they struggle to replace with the same caliber usually.
Robert, we've just talked about Daniel Carvalho heading to Palmeiras, who, of course, turned down Florin Malouda, according to their director of football, in favor of Daniel Carvalho, which make of that what you will. Palmeiras were in a bit of a crisis at the end of last season. There's been a lot of big talk coming out of the club about the likes of turning down Malouda, the likes of Juan Román Riquelme possibly coming in. But we haven't seen any kind of progress on that level. We have Juninho, an impressive left fullback from Figueirense, but that's counteracted with the loss of Gabriel Silva to Udinese. But nothing that suggests it's going to turn around what was a massive slump last season.
No, and you mentioned the comment by the Palmeiras director about the possibility of signing Malouda only to turn down. I mean, this is the kind of nonsense that drives Palmeiras fans crazy. It drives many supporters of Brazilian clubs crazy. Admittedly, it does not take a lot to push some of them over the edge, you know. Palmeiras fans, you know, the Manchester Verde, sort of a hardcore element, you know, they're kind of predisposed to being disrespectful to the point of being violent anyway. But I just wonder, you know, it's so disrespectful toward the sentiment and even the intelligence of fans when the director comes out with a blatant comment that's just designed to, it's like throwing a bone at a dog. It's like, okay, I'll allow them to chew on this transfer rumor to wonder what could be or what could have been in this case. I think it's pretty obvious, it's quite apparent what's going on when you have a situation like this, is that the Palmeiras, the board, the directorate is hopelessly divided. You know, it's quite a Machiavellian scene back there in the Parque Antarctica, you know? And they can't agree on signings, they can't agree on strategy. They, they're, so they are not serious about hiring new players, about even scouting for new players. So, I think that was a diversionary tactic. It was a way to kind of bury the bad news, if you will. And they show no signs of really of signing players of the caliber who will bring them into the title dispute.
Rio, we obviously spoke about similar kind of media tactics with Flamengo and this kind of creating a smokescreen to hide the mess that's behind the scenes at the club. But Palmeiras are one of the biggest teams in Brazil, and they're in Sao Paulo, city and state that's had some great success in recent years, with Santos winning the Libertadores, Sao Paulo winning three Brasileirão titles in a row, Corinthians winning the Brasileirão last year. Palmeiras fans must be getting very annoyed about this constant state of almost disrepair that the club seems to be falling into.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in a lot of ways it does match what's going on at Flamengo. I think fans are unhappy, and you're right, there's all these fantastical rumors about signing this player and that player, but none of them quite go through, and it doesn't really seem like they were even close. I think fans are generally confused about what's going on in Palmeiras, and I think even the players are. Valdivia just came out and talked about how, you know, the club hasn't made any big signings, and if they're expected to challenge for anything next year, they need to sign players, and that's what the directors are supposed to do. That's literally their job, and they're not doing it. So he had some choice words to say there, and, you know, Valdivia is one of the bigger names in the Palmeiras squad in their dressing room. So I think that says a lot. Let's not forget they lost Kleber, and I think that's a big loss for them. He's a fantastic forward, a reference point, really. And, of course, there were attitude issues and things going on in the background, and maybe he had to go. But, you know, when he left, he also implied that, you know, things are just not very positive right now in the Palmeiras back room.
But we're talking about them being in a mess, and we're talking about the likes of Valdivia and Kleber, who've had not disciplinary problems, but kind of attitude problems during their time at Palmeiras. They haven't taken training as seriously as they should have. They've fallen out with coaching staff. And yet, they've signed Daniel Carvalho, who, as Robert said, hasn't fulfilled his God-given potential. But last week, they turned it down eventually, but they were linked with Carlos Alberto, who is perhaps the biggest example of someone who hasn't fulfilled the talent that was granted in his direction. This guy was a Champions League winner at 19 years old. And surely this is the kind of player that Palmeiras need to be avoiding right now, Rio.
Well, you know, it could always work out, right? The hope is that when you sign the type of player like Daniel Carvalho, that exactly what you spoke about, that unfulfilled potential, you know, maybe it's the right club, the right time, the right squad, and everything will work out, and maybe, you know, all of a sudden the player will be fantastic. I think at the end of the day, it's a gamble. I think, you know, you roll the dice and you hope that you get something positive out of it. That's what Palmeiras is hoping for. That's what Atlético hoped for when they signed Daniel Carvalho originally. So, you know, it could very well work out. It might not work out. You could see it playing out so many different ways, right? You could see it that Daniel Carvalho does very well. You could see it that, you know, within 4 months he's in the reserves because of some fallout with, you know, Scolari. So, you know, who's to say what will happen? But it's indicative of the type of strategy that the directors have, right? You know, they are rolling dice right now. They're not sort of thinking very strategically and making moves that are less risky and make a lot of sense.
We've talked about moves falling through then, Robert. Santos only made one foray into the market this window. We spoke about it in our last podcast because it was effectively confirmed. Jonas of Coritiba to go and fill the right-back role deserted by Danilo. But that has fallen through. And now Santos are kind of playing games with Porto over possibly bringing Futile in as part of the Danilo agreement.
Yeah, and I think Santos needs to be pretty careful here. Luis Alvaro Oliveira Ribeiro, the president, of course, you know, he arguably pulled off the management trick year last year in signing and securing Neymar's services until 2014. So I guess he has a lifetime of credit as far as the Sanchistas are concerned. But I would be very concerned, you know, not just because of the shellacking that they received from Barcelona in the World Club Championship, but more to do with during the second half of the Brazil round. You know, Rio talked about before that, like, you know, Neymar was practically carrying that team forward. But really, you look at it, and it's not that strong a squad. I mean, for a team which won Libertadores, I would say that they were one of the weakest Libertadores sides of recent years. Now, I say that with a caveat. One of the weakest sides who happened to have two of the greatest talents, individual talents, Neymar and Gans. But you look at Santos, and they're not that strong around the pitch. I mean, in fact, even during the final days of Libertadores competition last year, remember they were playing with Zé Edgardo up front? I mean, God almighty, you know. this was a club which really needed to go about building a team around Neymar and Gans, if Gans was going to be there for much longer.
Rio, I should point out at this point, Flamengo were linked with Zé Eduardo this week, which I'm sure filled you with huge joy. But Santos at least have managed to keep Borges, who was linked with a move to Turkey. But Gansel's future, for one, is not secure. They've lost Danilo, who, along with Neymar, carried them through a lot of the rounds in the Libertadores last year. And they haven't replaced Danilo, who was crucial either at right back or in midfield. He seemed to be very important to that team last year.
Yeah, I think Robert summed it up really well that, you know, they have a few great individual talents and they've done quite well to hold on to them, but it's not a very deep squad and you know, they rely on a few players for the entire squad to do well. You know, I like Borges a lot, but to be honest, I'm not sure if he can have the same sort of season that he had this past year, scoring as many goals. That would be an incredible feat if he can have a season like that again. And, you know, I think they have great players, or at least very good players like Edu da Sena and Aroca, of course, Ganso Neymar. But, you know, beyond those guys, you know, I'm not sure there's too much more there. Elano, you know, had a very serious drop in form, essentially, after the Copa America. Maybe that missed penalty got to him, but he hasn't quite been the same. I would like to see more from players like Ibson, who arrived. He was playing in Moscow, did quite well there, but just was a little homesick, did well at Flamengo before that. But he hasn't quite shown the form that people expected from him. So, you know, they have a lot of weaknesses, and I think that they're maybe a bit too positive about the fact that they did win the Libertadores, that they have held on to Neymar, they have held on to Ganso and a few others, but they haven't gone out to improve upon it. And, you know, off seasons, you have to improve. That's the rule of the game. You can't just sit there because everybody else around you is going to be proving.
We've got a few minutes left to take it up to the hour mark. The two Rio clubs we haven't discussed then. Robert, so Botafogo, we talked last time, me and Rio, they brought in Brenner in defense and Andrezinho from Internacional, who's very much a hit-and-miss player. On his day, he can be excellent, though. And interestingly, in the last couple of weeks, they brought in José Rojas from Universidad de Chile, who was the captain of that side who won the Copa Sudamericana. And he's very much a like-for-like replacement with Cortés going straight in a left-back. What have you made of their winter activity?
Well, I think Rojas is better than Cortés. He won the
Copa Sudamericana, and you know there was a kind of an argument. I must admit, I was party to this argument. I was curious to find out whether people thought that Universidad de Chile were arguably the best side, the strongest side in Latin America right now, in terms of the football they were playing at the moment. And Rojas was an integral part of that. You know, great attacking fullback who could also play in the midfield across a variety of positions. And remember last year we discussed, well, towards the end of the close of last year, we were saying that one of the areas where Cortes was weak was when he came up against Ryan and did not give him much space. I don't think that would be a problem for Rojas. You know, he's used to playing in a system in which he has to press intensely. He has to defend very, very high up the pitch. So I think Botafogo have a great acquisition, particularly if you consider now that the overlap that he'll be able to provide. I just think that with a player of that kind of thrust, that attacking thrust, it's just going to be a great, great asset. I mean, I'm totally surprised that Botafogo could land a player of that caliber. I would have thought that he would have been on his way to Italy or Spain or some, or the Premier League, perhaps.
Rio, have you been similarly impressed with this purchase? I mean, Universidad de Chile seemed to win over many, many fans in just the space of a few months with their style of play. But Rojas himself, are you impressed by this one?
I am, yeah. I've only gotten to see him a handful of times, but he's been very impressive every time. And let's not forget, he was, you know, that Universidad de Chile side knocked out Vasco out of the Sulamericana, so I'm sure Botafogo had a keen eye on that game and saw how Rojas was doing against one of their big rivals. So he's also got some experience playing against, Rio de Janeiro sides. And, you know, like Robert said, I think, you know, Cortes, as meteoric as his rise was, I think it was probably too early to really judge how much, you know, how good he can actually be and how consistent he'll be able to be. I think Rojas is a much safer choice. And he comes in, you know, with great experience. I think he's, 28 years old? So he's still got several solid years left in him. And he was captain of his club, so I'm sure he's a good leader and will be a strong presence at the back. In interviews, he seems very positive and happy about the move. He's, you know, said that he hopes that he can stay in Brazil for many years and sort of see out his career here. So that's all very positive. And, you know, he was a big fan hit at Universidad de Chile. The fans loved him. He's essentially a club idol there. So, you know, whenever you bring in that type of player, I think it's always positive.
I like the fact you mentioned they beat Vasco without mentioning probably their bigger win. if anyone doesn't know, they beat Flamengo. Was it 4-0 in Rio de Janeiro?
I think I've erased all knowledge of that game from my head, unfortunately.
Talking of left backs then, Robert, Vasco have brought in Thiago Feltri from Atlético Goianiense, probably one of the best left backs outside the bigger clubs last season. Also, Rodolfo, a centre-back from Grêmio, Abaleras, a midfielder from River Plate, and probably most interestingly, Carlos Tenorio, the Ecuadorian striker from Al Nassr in Saudi Arabia over the past couple of days now.
I guess he will be competing for a post with Alexandro as kind of a pivot up front. So it'll be Feltri who will be overlapping Diego Souza then, and not Rojas. Pretty solid acquisitions from Vasco. I wouldn't say they're any standard. I don't think that level of acquisition same as perhaps with São Paulo. I still think I would expect Vasco, especially because of the nature of football, the style of football they play. I would, the mental strength which they demonstrated throughout the whole Ricardo Gomez saga, I would expect Vasco to be up there with the challenge of this season, you know?
Robert, I have a question for you. You're big on your tactical side of the game. Vasco, I think it was Tim Vickery pointed out when he was on the podcast, out of any of the Brazilian sides have the biggest potential to play this kind of Universidad de Chile or Barcelona-style high-pressing game with wide front men. And obviously last year they had Elton and Eder Luiz who could fulfill that kind of wide forward role that isn't seen that much in the Brazilian game. Elton's departed now, but do you think this Vasco side, with the players they have, the likes of Romulo in midfield, Dede at centre-back, do you think they do have that kind of enough about them that they could change their style of game to this the system that seems to trip up a lot of Brazilian sides?
I think they could have important elements of it. You know, I think on the offensive side, certainly. Vasco were one of the more intricate Brazilian sides of last season. And I think they could build on that and strengthen that aspect of their play. But defensively, in terms of pressing, I don't know. And don't forget, you know, we could be talking in the situation where a bad string of results leads to the coach, you know, for Ricardo Gomes, or I don't know if Gomes will take over the full position again. You know, actually, Vasco could easily change coaches in the season, and with which the coach was out, the tactical system and the whole philosophy. So you know, the threat of short-termism is always a corner in the Brazilian championship, and indeed in state championship. So I don't know. I think you need to have a very special kind of coach, but also a very special kind of project and institutional stability and a directorship who are willing to back the coach and have the patience in order to develop a Universidad de Chile type system, you know, where all the players are trained and are willing participants, in not just going forward, but also in winning back the ball and working behind the line of the ball. Now, that said, talk about the attacking element of it. They're probably the best place. Although I would argue São Paulo potentially have even more potential to carry that out.
Rio, Vasco, they're obviously going to be challenging in the Libertadores this season, which they weren't last year. So the Carioca State Championship might take a bit of a backseat. But do you think this side has the potential to do as well as they did last year, or do you think it's going to be tough for quite a small squad to match those levels?
I think you nailed it right there with the small squad comment. You know, last season I spoke about that they didn't have very much depth, and I was, you know, very surprised that they managed to go so far, still challenging in the Brasileirão and to the semis of the Sul-Americana with what was a very small squad. You know, overall, I like their signings. I think they're good. They're not necessarily great. I'm very curious to see how Carlos Tenorio is going to do. He's scored a lot of goals in the Middle East, so we'll see if he can translate that into Brazil. But we'll have to see. My gut tells me that they're going to struggle to play quite as well as last year. I think it was very unusual in a way how everything sort of came together for them. And their squad, you know, it's getting a little older. And, you know, players like Felipe and Juninho, year by year, they lose a little bit more. So, you know, I do think it'll be tough for them. But the great news is that, you know, holding on to the likes of Dede and Romulo, I think that's fantastic. Those are two great players, still young, will definitely improve in the coming year, keep improving. So there's a lot to be excited about the squad. We'll just have to see if they can have the same legs as last year.
Well, I think we'll leave it there for today. Thank you to the both of you. Robert, your work can be found on the Santa Pelota blog. What's the web address for that?
Santa Pelota at wordpress.com.
And that's Robert can be found on Twitter at Santa Pelota. It's been a pleasure talking to the both of you. This has been the Elastico podcast for Samba Foot once more, and we'll see you all next time.